There are names in the Amelia Earhart story that echo. Explorers, historians, and theorists. Voices that rise, fall, and fade as the decades pass. And then, there are ones who do not. The ones that stay. The ones that shape the conversation. The ones that, whether you agree with them or not, you have to reckon with. My guest tonight is one of those names. She didn't just step into the Earhart case, she dug in. Through archives, through personal correspondence, through the kind of painstaking research that most people wouldn't have the patience or, frankly, the stomach to see through. The book she released in 1993 didn't just tell the Amelia Earhart story, it reframed it. It stripped away the myth, the headlines, the almost cartoon-like legend that's been built up over nearly a century, and replaced it with something far more complicated. Far more human, and for a lot of people, far more uncomfortable. Because she doesn't deal in easy answers, she doesn't deal in tidy narratives, and she's never been afraid to challenge the status quo, even when it means pushing back against the loudest voices in the room, or the most popular theories in the world, including some that you and I know very well. And that's what makes this conversation tonight different. Because tonight isn't just about revisiting Amelia Earhart. It's about interrogating the story. It's about asking what we think we know and whether it actually holds up under pressure. It's about legacy, memory, myth-making, and the fine line between history and storytelling. So, whether you've read her work cover to cover, or you've disagreed with her for years, there's one thing that's undeniable. When she speaks on Amelia Earhart, people listen. And tonight, we're going there. The final boss has arrived. Welcome back to Chasing Earhart. From Lake Wales, Florida, this is Susan Butler. And we are live. Susan, thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate you. Welcome back to the show.
Well, it's nice to be on your show again.
Yes, we did this 9 years ago, and certainly a lot has changed in those 9 years. Amelia Earhart is hotter than she's ever been. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We have a sitting president who calls for the release of the Amelia Earhart files. We'll get to that, I'm sure. We have Lori Gwynne Shapiro's book that gives us a whole different side of Amelia Earhart. I'll get your opinion on that. And we have 4 active searches going on right now. What have you made of all of this?
I think it's absolutely wonderful that everybody is so interested in this fascinating, competent woman. I hope they find the remains of the plane. I'm sort of a skeptic, however. It's been so long, and I'm not sure at 17,000 feet when the plane went down, that no matter how careful the searchers are, I'm not sure that there are pieces large enough left. But certainly I hope that they'll find the remains of the plane. And actually, I went on one of the searches in 2009.
You sure did. I want to open tonight by asking you this question as plainly as I can. Has the search for Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan become more about being right? Or do you think it's still about finding the truth and getting to that truth ultimately?
I think it's about finding the truth. And I think that people think that if they find the plane, it would be a great coup. It's certainly an interesting endeavor. If I didn't know the history, I think I'd go on another boat if I was asked. However,
yeah,
I'm a skeptic.
How does it feel being a skeptic in this Amelia Earhart world in this case?
Well, it just makes me think that a lot of people are spending a lot of money and spending a lot of time. And I think the chances of actually finding the plane are pretty slim. What do you think?
Well, you're a skeptic. I'm optimistic. I love that, as you said, I agree with you. I love all of the attention that the case has received over the last several years. I love that Purdue is finally stepping up and getting involved in the case in an official capacity. I love Amelia Rose Earhart joining up with Nauticos and stepping into the search herself. I think there's a lot of sort of new faces, fresh faces, people that are stepping into the search for the very first time. We have Deep Sea Vision, Tony Romeo, and those folks who made news not too long ago with their search and their efforts. So you're seeing a lot of new faces sort of step into the case. And I think that makes me feel really good for the case in general. I think sort of passing that story in the case onto fresh minds, new faces, new ideas, I think certainly is nothing but beneficial to the case, if anything else. So I'm optimistic that I think it's going to happen soon. And I think we'll have some kind of finality soon. At least I hope.
Well, I certainly hope that something comes of these searches. Mm-hmm. But what really makes me happy is that she was such a fine woman and she was such a leader. I'm happy to have people talking about her. Mm-hmm. Because I think that she is valued as much for her intelligence as she is for the records that she set.
I agree. And I think that she was a woman who was at the prime of her life. We never got to see Amelia Earhart get old and gray.
Yes. Yeah. I love to say she is 39 forever.
Yeah.
And I think that actually her age was one of the motivating factors for her last flight.
She's sort of frozen in time, right?
Yes, I think that's an excellent way to put it. She is frozen in time.
Before we get into the disappearance side of things and the mystery side of things, who was Amelia Earhart to you when you first started this journey way back when?
Well, you know, my mother was a pilot in the 1930s. I was looking for a subject. I wanted to write a book about an American woman who I thought had contributed a great deal to our society and that her contributions were actually not sufficiently appreciated. And I started to look at all the information on Amelia Earhart. And I was really stunned to learn all the things that she did besides the record flights. Mm-hmm. She was such a motivated person, and she was always trying to raise the sights of women. She was an early feminist.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your perception changed by the time you finished East of the Dawn?
No. The more research I did, the more I was sure that I was right. She had done so much. She deserved her fame. I don't know anybody else who could influence a president of the United States the way she could.
Mm-hmm.
The director of air commerce that Roosevelt chose, she didn't think was up to the job, and she wanted her friend to be the director of air commerce. She wrote Roosevelt a letter, which is so cheeky. I mean, it is such an amusing letter. Here is Amelia Earhart. She's writing to FDR that if he doesn't appoint her friend, whom, of course, she is sure is enormously competent, she won't campaign for him. And so he changes his mind. He says, okay, you've convinced me. Jean Vidal will be the next director, will continue to be the director of air commerce.
What do you make of her throwing her weight around politically, so to speak? A lot of people don't really talk about that side of Earhart, but what do you think of her using her name and using her enormous popularity to convince a sitting president at the time to make a decision that she supported? What do you make of that?
What I make of it is that she realized how important she was in society, and she wanted to make a difference. She thought that her decision of who should be the director of air commerce would be the best thing for the air industry.
We have 4 active searches going on right now. People are searching for this aircraft all over the world, in different parts of the world. They're at different parts and stages of their searches. Is all of this competition within the disappearance side, is all this competition, do you think, good for the case overall?
I think it's terrific. I think it's absolutely wonderful. We want to find her because she's so important in our history.
Do you think Amelia has been remembered more as a symbol rather than a person?
Yes, I do. That's what history does. I hope she's always a symbol for women. I know that I still talk to women who are so fascinated by her personality and by her accomplishments. They devote part of a good chunk of their lives to talking about her and lecturing about her.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, East of the Dawn, it feels like it came out so long ago, but what was the most surprising thing you uncovered then that didn't really match the public narrative of Amelia Earhart? Have you ever learned anything that was, that's kind of interesting?
Well, of course I learned so much. I put in my book, I think it was for the first time, but maybe not, the letter she wrote to her husband. She was sort of a very free spirit, and whatever she wanted, she had no fear ever of expressing herself. So she was perfectly ready to not marry George Palmer Putnam if he didn't give her, for instance, all the freedom she wanted to either leave him or leave him for another man or just let her alone for a while. She just had no compunction saying to him that she wanted absolute freedom. Very rare for a woman. Actually, it's very rare for a man, for either spouse to present their wishes on their wedding day so carefully.
Yeah. Well, and that was my next question, but it's a good segue into it. I love segues. Do you think that was a radical decision for back in that time, or was everybody doing it and just not talking about it?
It was certainly a radical decision then for a woman to demand sexual freedom. I think it's pretty radical for right now. I don't know very many women hand their fiancés that letter on the morning of their wedding.
Yeah. No, especially coming out of left field. I am. I've been married for 12 years now. Yeah. Yeah.
And if your wife on your wedding day had handed you a letter like that, it would have been a stunning revelation, right?
It sure would have been. I would have been knocked off my feet, I think, if I would have read a letter hours before I was to walk down the aisle that was of that nature.
She was a very honest woman and very honest person, not particularly a woman. She was a very honest person. And she was, as we know, pretty fearless.
Yeah. Yeah, she really was. You know, I asked you this back when we first sat down 9 years ago for this show. I'll ask it again. You had spent so much time with Amelia Earhart during your research for East of the Dawn. In your opinion, who was Amelia really when the cameras and the newspapers weren't on her?
Who was she?
Yeah.
Well, that's a really interesting question. I'm not sure I can answer it. I don't know how to really answer that question, except to say that she was fearless in a sense that she didn't worry about what other people thought about her. Most people are always concerned about how their actions are being viewed by others. If she felt that she should do something, she was going to do it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned him earlier. Let's bring him back into the conversation. George Palmer Putnam, a partner, promoter, architect of the brand. How do you define his role in their marriage and in their relationship?
I think that they were a very good pair. I totally differ with Lori Gwynne Shapiro. I think he was her manager and he organized her life. I had a copy of her lecture schedule. And at one point, 1 year, she had a schedule that was so amazing. She gave 30 lectures in 30 cities in 30 days. She was on the road the whole time. Certainly her stamina was amazing, but also somebody had to organize all of those lectures. Somebody had to set everything up. I think he was a superb manager. He also, of course, we know he loved publicity.
Yeah.
And I totally disagree with Shapiro. I mean, I think she was her own master and did what she wanted when she wanted to.
Do you think the machine there in that, I guess in that instance, do you think that machine ultimately helped her, or do you think it put her at risk? And do you think she enjoyed a schedule like that? You know, 30 cities, 30 lectures, 30 days, that's grinding.
I think she absolutely loved it. Yes. She had incredible stamina. When you look at her flights, you know, they're all 14 hours, 15 hours, 20 hours. I mean, they were incredibly long, and there she is. She's a solo pilot, and in a plane in the 1930s, you had to be flying that plane all the time. You had to be watching everything, and I think she had an incredible amount of stamina. I think she was very gutsy. I'm totally biased, of course, in her favor. I think that besides that, I think that she was a very fair-minded person. And towards the end of her life, she was so involved in pushing femininity. She wouldn't even give money for when she was asked if the money was going to go for young boys. As far as she was concerned, her money would only go for young girls and to promote their lives.
You know, I wanted to ask you, and this is one that didn't make the original conversation, but I'll ask it now. How much of Amelia Earhart do you think was constructed for public consumption?
Oh, I think in the last couple of years, I think she was very aware of how important she was to women. And I think she was very careful to live up to people's expectations of her.
You know, The more I've made friends in this circle and met people, the more I've learned about different aspects of Amelia's life. I wanted to ask you a little bit about a gentleman by the name of Sam Chapman, who she was with prior to George Putnam. It seemed like they had a connection that was very, very different than the one that she had with George. Why do you think she never ended up marrying Sam Chapman?
I think that her life had changed so much that she realized that he really couldn't keep up with what she was going to become. I think she was very aware of where her future was leading her, and she wanted it. She wanted to be a leader. She wanted to be a role model. She consciously chose her role. She was certainly not going to be a normal housewife. It's just a really sweet, normal man. In my book, I have a copy of a letter he wrote recommending her. It's not a very good letter. It doesn't show him as being competent, really, to be a lifelong companion.
You know, today is the anniversary of the ground loop incident in Hawaii when she attempted to take off from Luke Field in Hawaii and she crashed the plane, ground looped the plane.
Right.
It's a good day to ask you this question. When Amelia set out on the final flight, what do you believe her state of mind was?
You mean when she took off from Miami afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe especially, well, that and maybe especially on the ground loop. What do you think that did to her state of mind when she ground looped the plane and they had to reset the flight in reverse direction?
I think she was extremely upset because they had made such elaborate plans. And certainly to have that happen was a huge, huge, huge setback, not only just financially, but emotionally. And then she had to change the entire flight and reverse it because of weather conditions. I think it was probably a terrible thing for her, but I think that they didn't have any choice but to go through with the flight.
Do you think that was a fate-sealing decision that she made that day? Do you think if they had been able to make that takeoff in Hawaii that we'd be here talking about her disappearance so many years later?
Probably. She was going to, of course, start out flying the Pacific, and that would be the beginning of her flight, and she would have had two navigators with her. And you could say that the only time she ever relied on a man, he let her down. She wasn't the one that was navigating. He was the one that was navigating, and the plane went down.
Yeah.
Now, the question, of course, is whether it was dangerous. She thrived on danger. She thrived on challenges. I mean, when she did her solo flight across the ocean, she didn't even take a parachute.
Right.
You know, because she thought that if she crashed in the ocean, parachute wasn't going to do any good. She's just a very gutsy person.
Yeah, I'll say so. Do you think she understood the risk that she was taking, the level of the risk that she was taking?
Oh, yes. I mean, her best friend, one of her best friends was Wiley Post, who had crashed and died in Barrow, Alaska. He was on his third round the world flight when he crashed. All the pilots then, the challenge was whether they could succeed making record flights. And there was always a danger.
There certainly was. You've seen every theory out there. Why do you think this case attracts so many competing narratives?
You know, Chris, one of the things I truly do not understand is why Nicanor Island, for instance, is everybody's favorite destination. And that happens to be an island that was overflown a few days after the plane went missing. Still, people keep going back there.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate for that theory. It's particularly not my favorite theory, but let's dig into it a little bit. What do you think it is about Nicomororo that garners so much attention?
Chris, to me, it's a major mystery.
Yeah.
I do not understand it.
Yeah.
It is just crazy. People are wasting their time. Rick Gillespie has been, I've lost track of how many voyages. He's been there like more than 10 times, and he hasn't found anything. After one voyage, he said that they'd found a piece of glass, and then he described it as from a jar of freckle cream.
Right. Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, Nicanor Island is not where the plane landed. Yeah. I should say where the plane crashed.
Yeah. Well, where, in your opinion, I'll ask you straight out, where, in your opinion, do you think they went down?
Well, because the ocean floor to the west has been searched, and that's where I was on the Seward Johnson and on one of the trips where the ocean floor was searched to the west, Howland Island. And I don't think that the eastern side has been sufficiently searched. So I would assume that the searches that are going to be in the future will be on the east side. And if there is anything possibly left, it will be found there.
Over the last, 88 years, do you think we've made real progress towards any kind of answers? Or are we just telling better stories?
I think you know what I think. I think we're just telling better stories.
With the recent release of the Earhart files, what's your initial reaction to that when you hear that kind of news?
My initial reaction is that there's nothing in the government Earhart files. My book came out so long ago, 1993. Basically, in the late 80s is when I was investigating what the government had. The government doesn't have a whole lot.
Well, let me ask you, Nauticos is fundraising out there. They've got Amelia Rose Earhart aboard to help them fundraise and help Nauticos sort of come into the 21st century and how fundraising is done these days. What do you make of Nauticos still being at it and, of course, them bringing someone like Amelia Rose on to help front their fundraising? Is that a good move, ultimately?
It's wonderful, but Chris, you may know where they are going to be searching. Do you know?
I do not know. Not specifically. They keep that pretty close to the chest, I think.
Well, I hope they find some piece of the plane. If they're going to be searching places that have been thoroughly searched, then they're not going to find anything.
That really frustrates me, is we seem to be going over the same areas, or roughly the same areas. There's a lot of overlap when it comes to the deep ocean search, and that maybe is the one thing that frustrates me the most about the deep ocean searches.
I don't understand it either, and I don't understand so many trips to Nikumarora Island. Because that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. Going back to the same location more than, a few times if you're trying to wrap up an investigation or a theory, if you're trying to follow a hypothesis till the very end. This newest expedition is a different angle. Rick Pettigrew is a very nice guy. I've had him on the show a couple of times. And I think Purdue sort of throwing their hat into the ring and getting involved with the Archaeology Channel and Rick Pettigrew's team is an interesting move. We'll see if it plays out. We'll see how it works and we'll see what they find.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think really that a new search should search in new places. There's no point searching places that have been already searched. In the list of books and people who, there are people who've devoted their lives to find Amelia Earhart.
What do you think of that in general? People that have devoted their lives.
I think it's wonderful that people love her so much that they want to find out where she was. So I think it's wonderful that people are that involved with Earhart. And that's part of her mystery, actually, Chris. It's her effect on people. Because she was such a wonderful person that people want sort of more of her. I mean, there are, of course, a number of people like Eleanor Smith, who was so jealous of her that she would tell a lie, she would do anything just to tear down her reputation. But most everybody, really, her contemporaries in the 99s and the other pilots who set records were all her friends, were all really involved and respected her a great deal. There she was. She was one of the originators and one of the first. And she was the first, actually, president of the 99s. I guess there are always people who are going to try and tear down people.
What do you make of that? I mean, a woman in the 21st century like Amelia Earhart, who's got this towering, towering legacy now that is just out there, and all of this attention on her ending, her and Fred Noonan's ending specifically. What do you think of somebody who was able to have those kinds of relationships in that time, be thought of in that way, be thought of as, a nice person, a genuine soul, but at the same time, one of the best pilots in the world? Is that a hard balance to strike?
I don't think it is, but I mean, the older I get, the more I am amazed how people read things into events that aren't there. I'm constantly amazed.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to ask you this too. You mentioned it earlier. I mean, you've been on one of these searches. So you've been there. What is the vibe like when you're on a search like that? What is, how does that feel to be actually looking for Amelia Earhart with one of the crews? Is that a different vibe?
I really enjoyed myself. It was nice people. I saw two green flashes.
Really? Okay.
We even had the internet on the boat.
Yeah.
And this is in 2009, so it was a very well-equipped boat. I think it's wonderful that all these people are trying to find Earhart because it shows the importance, her importance in our society. When I was writing my book, I put in a query in the Purdue Alumni magazine if anybody was still alive, because it was so long ago. I figured that there would be women in their 70s and 80s and 90s or whatever. And I got answers.
Yeah.
A couple of women wrote back that she had changed their lives. She was really the genuine article. And I don't know that we'll ever see the likes of her again. I think she was just a wonderful person.
Why do you think Amelia Earhart still resonates so deeply today?
Well, quite possibly it's because of her dramatic end.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that served to sort of nail down her reputation, because she was such an important person to so many people. There are schools all over the United States named the Amelia Earhart School. She's just a wonderful role model for girls.
Mm-hmm.
She gives girls hope that they can control their own lives the way she controlled hers.
Yeah. We touched a little bit on Lori's book that comes out last summer, causes a lot of big waves, as new books tend to do when they come out around this subject and around this woman in particular. What did you think of her book, first of all, overall? And do you think it introduced us to any other side of Amelia Earhart that we hadn't previously known about?
Well, Lori Gwen Shapiro, I think she even said on your show that her interest in Earhart was sparked by George Palmer Putnam. Her research was terrific, but she makes a lot of mistakes. I mean, on page one, she made a mistake. She's got Amelia's age wrong. Amelia was 30 years old, not 31 years old.
Mm.
I'm sure you've read the book. I know you've had it on your show.
Yes, I read it.
It's a fascinating book, but she makes it sound like George Palmer Putnam ran everything. And on the first page, she even talks about Putnam planning this trip. It's not the way it happened. I actually get so upset by all of her running down of Amelia Earhart. I really don't understand it.
Well,
I mean, this is what she wrote on the first page.
Yeah.
Idea was familiar. Sponsor the wildly risky adventure. Find someone physically attractive and willing to imperil their own life. Sign them to an exclusive tell-all deal. Publicize the thing to the max and make a fortune on book sales.
Yeah.
So it makes it sound as if he originated the idea for Amelia's flight.
Mm.
And pages later, she mentions Amy Phipps.
Yeah, that's right.
There it was. Mm. But she would have been famous anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She was chosen by the Phipps family to make the flight.
Yeah.
Because she made the flight, she then became sort of like Lindbergh's twin.
Huh.
She was equally famous just because people couldn't believe that a female could even be a passenger in an airplane.
You know, we've talked a lot tonight about the mystery and about her in the modern age. Do you think the mystery enhances her legacy, or do you think it overshadows her life?
I think it adds to her persona. I think it adds to her fame.
Yeah. How do you think she'd feel? I've asked this question a couple of times. I asked had Susan Ware on the show a couple of episodes back, and I asked her this question. I'll ask it to you. How would Amelia feel about the way we talk about her today?
I think she'd be thrilled, because I think most people... No, I really do. I mean, because I think most people are impressed with what she did. She was very competent. She spent her days trying to make women think more of themselves, make more of themselves, have careers, have respect for their own accomplishments. I think that she would be thrilled with the role that women now play in our society. And I think she was one of the women that made it possible. She's the greatest role model you could possibly have.
Certainly agree with that. I couldn't put it better myself. Just a couple more questions before we wrap up. One I've been wanting to ask you since we started chatting about you coming back on the show. In all your research and all the time you spent with her, is there a question about Amelia that you still can't answer and maybe never will be able to?
She said that after she finished her final flight, that she was going to hang up her spurs and just be content at 40. To be a role model for women. She wasn't going to do any more record flights. She was going to settle down and be a teacher. So I respect her enormously, but I think I know her pretty well. She was all of a piece. She was dynamic, self-aware, competent, and she was kind. Obviously, I put her on a pedestal, but I think that she was a very unusual person. And other famous adventurers are adventurers because they wanted to be an adventurer, right? She wanted to be a social worker, and she was dumped into the role, and then she took advantage of it. But she didn't seek it. And so that made her unusual, that she didn't seek the role of being the adventurer.
That's true. She didn't seek it. That's a good point. What does closure look like to you in a case in a story like this?
I don't think there is any closure. I think every generation is going to investigate her again.
You're of the mind that we probably don't solve this.
I think it would be wonderful if we did solve it. But as the years go by, it's going to be less and less possible. I'm really amazed that there are 4 searches going on now. I think it's wonderful, but I don't understand it.
Yeah. All right. Well, final question of the night. When all is said and done, how do you think Amelia Earhart should be remembered?
I think she should be remembered as a very brave woman who devoted her life to raising women's sights. She was a feminist, and she was competent, and she wanted to make the world a better place. And for her to make the world a better place, it was for women to pick up their role and contribute to society.
Yeah. All right. Well, the book is East to the Dawn, and we will link it in the show's notes. There's so many wonderful books out there in the Earhart lore, and this is, you know, still, in my opinion, the number one book. It's still the seminal biography on Amelia Earhart. And Susan, it's an honor. It was an honor 9 years ago when you said yes. It was an honor when you said yes to doing Vanished with me and doing that cameo there. And this is an even bigger honor tonight. So Susan, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you. And I just want to say one more thing, which is that what Amelia wanted in the last years of her life was to make women raise their sights and have careers and not just be content to be housewives and wait for their husbands to come home.
Amen to that. Susan Butler, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to chasingearhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at chasingearhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarrus Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated. Chris Evan Films, Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated, and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. All rights reserved.